So today, I've been so looking forward to this. We are going to be in the story of David and Saul. You can find that in 1 Samuel chapter 4. I invite you to follow along. But as you do, as you open up your Bibles or open up the message notes, columbiagrove.org/message notes, go to columbiagrove.org and just swipe right. You'll get right to them. If you want to follow along, I need you to use your imaginations, okay? I want you to imagine that we are in the Valley of En-Gedi. En-Gedi is a valley that, there we go, that is just west of the Dead Sea in Israel. A deep canyon with a river in the bottom and lots and lots and lots of caves. And you and I, we are in one of those caves. We're tucked way in the back. We're among the 600 men that are with Saul at this point. These renegades, these misfits, these people that didn't really fit anywhere else, kind of these freelance soldiers journeying with David, protecting Israelite villages and raiding enemy territory in order to keep going. Many times we would be traveling at night, which means during the day we find cool, dark, hidden places to sleep. And so you and I, we're in the back of one of those caves in the walls of the Valley of En-Gedi. And you've just been woken up from your sleep. As you listen outside the cave door, it sounds like an army, a huge, huge army. Your heart starts to race. You can feel a pit in your stomach because there's only one way out of the cave. Have they found us? Everybody is silent. You reach for your dagger because if someone's coming through that door, if someone's coming through that cave door, you realize you're going to have to fight for your life. You listen more carefully. It's a huge army. That's got to be King Saul. There's thousands of them. We're hopelessly outnumbered. As your heart is pounding and your hands are on the ready, you pray a prayer, a silent prayer just under your breath. Oh God, God, don't let them see us. Don't let them see us. Lord, spare us. Lord, spare us. You look to your left and there's David right there, crouched over, close by. His hand is on his dagger as well. If any soldier comes through the door of that cave, you know what's going to happen next. But as you watch, the army gathers around the mouth of the cave, especially some heavily armed people right close to the cave. What's going on? And then one of them steps forward. He's wearing a robe. You can only assume that's King Saul. And he speaks to some of the heavily armed men. You hear in the distance something like this.
Keep watch. I'm going in the cave for some personal business.
And as you hunch back there in the cave, your hand on the dagger, you watch as King Saul walks to the door of the cave. And all of the soldiers, including the guards, turn their backs and face the other way. King Saul, this man who has been pursuing you and King David for several years now, who would kill you if he saw you, is coming right through the door of the cave. You see him take off his belt, which holds his dagger, and lay that on the ground. You see him take off his robe. You see more than you need to see. And you see him squat down. He is absolutely unguarded. He is completely distracted and totally vulnerable. You lean over to David and you say the thing that everybody in that cave is thinking right now. You whisper to him, This is the day that the Lord spoke of when he said to you, I will give your enemy into your hands. That's a Bible verse, by the way, QQQ in the back. I will give your enemy into your hands. Click the slide for you to deal with. Click the slide for you to deal with as... Can you click the slide, please? For you to deal with as you wish. Come on, David. Come on, David. What are you waiting for? And you watch as David pulls away from you and the rest. You can see the glimmer of the glint of light from the dagger in his hand as he draws closer and closer and closer to Saul. Come on, David, do it. Come on, David, do it. This is your chance. We've been praying for this. We've been waiting for this. Cut his throat, David. Cut his throat before he has a chance to make any noise, and we'll all be free, and you'll be king just like God promised you. Come on, David, what are you waiting for? You see, as David lifts up his dagger, and he's about to draw in, this is your chance. This is your moment. Do it. And then just before his arm swings, he stops. You see him pull back. As he's pulling back, he cuts a corner off of Saul's robe and comes back to the group. David, what are you thinking? But David looks sad. And he says to you, the Lord forbid that I should do such a thing to my master, the Lord's anointed, or lay my hand on him, for he is the anointed of the Lord. Come on, David, you think to yourself, if you're not going to kill him, I will. And you see David look at you and shake his finger and mouth the words, no. And soon enough, Saul's business is completed. You see him put his robe back on. You see him hitch up his belt. And you see him walk out of the cave. David, what are you thinking? Saul gathers the guards again, and they start to make their way out. From the back of the cave, David runs forward into the daylight, calling out and bursting into the daylight and laying himself prostrate on the ground, completely vulnerable, completely humbled. My Lord, the King, you hear him cry, and the entire army turns. And everybody is watching David at the mouth of the cave. My Lord, the King, he says, why do you listen when men say David is bent on harming you? This day you have seen with your own eyes how the Lord delivered you into my hands in the cave. Some, and he looks at you, some urged me to kill you, but I spared you. I said, I will not lay my hand on my Lord because he is the Lord's anointed. See, my father, look at this piece of your robe in my hand. I cut off the corner of your robe, but did not kill you. See, there is nothing in my hand to indicate that I am guilty of wrongdoing or rebellion. I have not wronged you, but you are hunting me down to take my life. May the Lord judge between you and me, and may the Lord avenge the wrongs that you have done to me, but my hand will not touch you. Saul thinks about it a moment, and as Saul turns back to David, you can see a shift in his countenance. Is that your voice? He says. You are more righteous than I. You've treated me well, but I've treated you badly. You have just now told me about the good you did to me. The Lord delivered me into your hands, but you did not kill me. When the man finds his enemy, does he let him get away unharmed? May the Lord reward you well for the way you treated me today. I know, David, that you will surely be king, and that the kingdom of Israel will be established into your hands. So now swear to me by the Lord that you will not kill off my descendants or wipe out my name from my father's family. And so David and Saul, they made an oath to each other. And Saul's army went its way. And David and you and me and this whole renegade misfit soldier group that we're a part of went the other way. Now, the reason why I wanted to tell that story this morning is that in it we see David faced with the same kind of temptation that every single one of us who has ever experienced a call from God in our life, every single one of us who's ever heard God's promises and know that God has good things in store for us, it's the same temptation that we face. Now, so I'm assuming that some of you right here, right now, are facing that temptation, or you're going to need it really soon. It's the temptation of the shortcut. So I want to introduce a phrase to you this morning, lay something on your heart, my heart, and maybe equip you with something to live in a more faithful, more victorious way. Here's the phrase. I will not cut corners. Say that with me. I will not cut corners. Say it again.
I will.
One more time like you believe it. I will not cut corners. Corners, because we are tempted, aren't we, all the time, especially in our culture, in our quick results, do it right now culture, we are tempted to cut corners everywhere. What am I talking about? Here's what I'm talking about. It's a student. Who here is a student? Student. You're a student. A lot of you are students. More of you should be students. But you're the student that's looking at the exam in front of you. And maybe you have the misfortune of having parents that care more about your grades than your effort. And you know that you are 2, 3, maybe 4 clicks away from the answers to that exam. You know how easy it would be to cheat. And you know how much the grade that you could get if you cheated would perhaps please your parents. You are tempted to take the shortcut. You are tempted to take the easy way. You are tempted to cut corners. So every student in the room, you say it with me. I will not cut corners. Corners. It's every taxpayer. Any taxpayers here? All your hands go up. Every taxpayer, you're looking at your income tax return. You're getting ready to file each year. And come on, you can spend your money better than the government, right? And who's going to find out? And how easy is it to fudge those numbers? How easy is it to just bend the truth a bit? Who will ever know? So every taxpayer, say it with me. I will not cut corners. It's every couple that has ever been in love. Have you ever been in love? Hell yes. It's a beautiful thing. It's every couple that's ever been in love and has felt the pull, the temptation, the one that we experience in every area of our culture today, the temptation to act like you're married before you really are. The temptation to indulge in sex before there's actual commitment. And everybody's doing it. Almost everybody is doing it, and it's such a great thing. Why not have it now? But so for everyone who's ever been in love, say it with me. I will not cut corners. It is every consumer. Anybody out here ever buy anything? It is every consumer out there that has been tempted to buy a house or a car or a gadget that is beyond what you can afford, so that you have the illusion of success before you've actually attained it. You know how quick and easy and cheap credit is. And so you feel the pull to make a financial commitment that you know you can't sustain because you just so desperately want to feel successful. And so for everyone out there who's ever bought anything, say it with me. I will not cut corners. It is every person in ministry who sensed God's call, and you started to add up the costs of Bible school or seminary, and it's a lot of hard work, and it's a lot of hard study. Or you could just go to get ordained online in 10 minutes for 10 bucks. And you think, why do I want to take the long road? Why do I want to do the hard work? So for everyone who's ever been tempted to take the shortcut, say it with me, I will not cut corners. It's every business person who knows that a fast sale will make you more money than building a business slowly and carefully over time. It might even make your investors more happy. Build it up fast, get good numbers on the books, sell it off, make your profit, walk away. Why build something that lasts when you could just get rich now? So for every person who's ever owned anything more than a lemonade stand, say it with me, I will not cut corners. It's Jesus in the desert after 40 days, and he's hungry, and he's tired. And the tempter comes to him, and he says, why don't you turn these stones into bread, Jesus? Why worry about the long road, the hard way of the cross? You could just do something really dramatic right now to prove to everyone that you're the Son of God. It'd be so much easier. It'd be so much quicker. Aren't you glad that our Savior took the long, hard way rather than the short, easy way? And so for every person who's ever been grateful that Jesus took the long road, did the hard work of the cross and the resurrection rather than the fast road of the large-scale miracles, say it with me, I will not cut corners. So why don't we cut corners? Here's why. Because God, here's the second phrase I want to leave you with today. It's because God is working in the waiting. God is working in the waiting. God's promise to David that he would one day be king would absolutely come true. But it would come true 15 years after the day he received that promise. That's 15 years of hiding in the desert. That's 15 years of running for his life. That's 15 years of being tempted, just like that moment that we just recalled with Saul in the cave. 15 years of preparation. You know, as God is wanting to entrust you with greater and bigger things, he's going to want to prepare you for it. He is so much more concerned about your character than your track record. Do you know that? He is so much more concerned about your character than your bank account. Do you know that? And so God was preparing David in his time on the run, slowly but surely building the kind of character in him that would enable him to be one of the greatest kings of Israel. And even then, there were temptations that would take him down. We're going to talk about that next week. But God is working in the waiting. I'm so glad that Jesus did the hard work of the cross, took the long road instead of the shortcut. And so, friends, I just want to remind you of that story of David and Saul. And ironically, in the story, I thought that was kind of funny, is how at the very moment that David found the strength to not cut corners in terms of taking Saul's life is as he was cutting the corner of Saul's robe. It was in that moment of restraint. It was in that moment when he realized he could have taken this in two directions. It was in that moment that he decided, I'm going to trust God. I'm going to take the long road. I'm going to trust God's timing for justice. I'm going to trust God's timing for my accomplishment. I'm going to trust God's timing for vengeance. And my prayer this morning is that for you and for me and for us in the places where we're waiting, and I bet you that there are at least dozens of stories of waiting right now in the room. Places where you are longing for God to follow through on something that you know is good, something you know he would have for you. It just hasn't happened yet. That physical healing, that relational breakthrough, that promise that you have been waiting on. Where are you waiting for God in your life right now? Because friends, I want you to know that God is working in the waiting. He's working in your waiting. He was working in David's waiting. He was working in Jesus' waiting. He is working in the waiting. So trust him. Don't seize the opportunity before its time. How do you know if you're working on your time rather than God's time? If you have to compromise your values in order to seize the opportunity, you might be cutting corners. Now, if we're being honest, all of us, we get tempted by this. This is a universal temptation. So all of us have had times where we've run ahead of God's timing in our life. And what do you do then? We run right back into the loving hands of God. A God who gives second chances and third chances and 200th chances and 3,000th chances. Thank you, Jesus. We run back into his loving arms. We allow him to build us up. And we grow just a little bit more for next time. So I want to leave us and lead us in a little time of prayer. Especially if you're one right now who feels like you're in a season of waiting. And if I can just be so bold, if you say, you know, I'm right now, there's something in my life that I am waiting on. I'm waiting on God on. Will you put your hand up? I'm just waiting. That's right. I pray that today God will strengthen you to trust him in your season of waiting. So I want to lead us in a little prayer. I invite you to say out loud with me, Lord, I will not cut corners. Lord, thank you for working in my waiting. And then that prayer of surrender, work in me, Jesus.